So the question that we are left with every year as we gather around the manger, as we reflect on the details of this birth, is this question of what child is this? I mean, we know the hymns and we know the kind of responses that we get there, that reflection upon the fact that this is Christ the King. He is the one who has come to save us. And yet, the fact remains that it is a bizarre story. It is an odd kind of a story, and the details that we're provided with do leave us wondering. The Gospel of Luke, for example, for all of the lead-up and for all of the long reflections on the Annunciation, the announcing of the birth of first John the Baptist and then of Jesus, when it comes to the actual birth of Jesus, we're only given two verses to describe this moment in human history. And there are lots of details around that that we've kind of had to pack out and to pad on the basis of just a few words there. For example, we've built the whole scenario of the whole scene of the cave or the nativity of where that took place from the fact that Luke simply tells us that there was no room in the inn, in the katalumatai. The katalumatai is this word that Luke uniquely uses here for inn. He uses other words for inn. For example, in the parable of the Good Samaritan, he uses the more ordinary word for inn there. Here, katalumatai can mean all kinds of different sorts of dwellings. I mean, it could mean an inn, or it could mean a hostel, or could simply just mean the house of the in-law, so the house of Joseph, where he's been staying, or where his family is from, given that this is the house, the town of David, and it's from the house where Joseph's family come from. Perhaps it's simply just that the house was too full on the night when all of this was unfolding, and so Mary has to find somewhere to put the child, and so the manger becomes the least useless kind of place to put him, or the best that she could find for him. Luke also wants to tell us not the story of the rich and powerful. He situates the story in that context, but he focuses on the shepherds. And the one thing that you always knew about a shepherd, the one way that you could tell that a person was in fact a shepherd, was not the way they were dressed or not the information that they might present about themselves, but you could tell from a long distance that a person was a shepherd by the stench, by the aroma of that person, that they would mix and sleep with those sheep even before New Zealand came around. There was all of that sense of that wonderful aromas and all of the kind of the weirdness of that as well. Shepherds were famous not for being good pastors, but for the fact that they were often brigands and thieves, that they would use people's land that wasn't their own in order to pasture the animals and things like that. So the shepherds certainly didn't have that good reputation. And yet Luke gives us these two little details in this sparsely told account to provide a bit of a sense of the texture of this night. Because one of the things that we discover in this moment is that, in fact, what we encounter is that in the Christ child, in the Jesus who is born among us, we have what Paul will later announce when he's at the Areopagus in Athens in Acts chapter 17. The God is the one in whom we live and move and have our being. Paul wants us to understand that because of the birth of Jesus, that God is no longer distant, he's no longer absent, he's no longer confined to some other place. He's suddenly here among us. He is Emmanuel. He is the one that we're able to recognize because he's with us now. And so he is the one in whom we are able to have all of our existence, all of our life, all of the sustenance, all of the sense of who we are is able to be there in the very midst of a God who is the one in whom we live and move and have our being. One of the moments, one of the various encounters, for example, of the shepherds as the angels appear to them and the message of the birth of Jesus is announced to them. Naturally, their first response is fear. They're just overwhelmed, overcome, frightened, out of their wits in the midst of all of this. And even though the angels will tell them, as the angels tell every person that they encounter, both in the Hebrew Scriptures and in the New Testament, do not be afraid. It's not enough, is it? You know, if someone fearful and just awesome in their wonder comes before us, and naturally we're fearful, and that person says, do not be afraid, well, it can take a bit more convincing than that. And fear is one of those things that is often there in our encounter with the Lord. And maybe that's another reason that Jesus comes as a little baby, to take away some of that fear and some of that anxiety. Because all those realities are part of our ordinary lives. I love what Liz Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love and Big Magic, says about this. She says that she's a very fearful kind of person, and she says fear often prevents her from doing all of the many things that she knows that she wants to do. And she says, look, I don't tell fear just to go away. You know, saying do not be afraid doesn't help often. But she says, like, if I'm on a road trip, I let fear be there. But fear is just in the back seat of the car. I say, fear, you can't drive. You can't direct where we're going to turn off. You can't choose the music that we're going to listen to. You can't tell me what food I'm going to be eating when we stop for a break. But you can be there as part of the whole experience, because fear is always going to be there. And sometimes it drives us to the greatest creative moments. And perhaps that's another reason that Jesus is here among us, to provide that opportunity to experience it. Because we are in fact allowed simultaneously to be that masterpiece of what God has created us to be, but also that work in progress, that we don't have to have all of our stuff together right here, right now. The work of redemption is ongoing, and just as a child has to grow and continue to develop, so also in our response to God, that we need to continue to experience that as well. I love this saying of St. Teresa, that of course sometimes all of the needs that we see in the world are overwhelming. We can just feel so inadequate for all of the things that need to be done. But she says, never worry about the numbers. Help just one person at a time, and always start with the person who's nearest to you right now. And so as we conclude this part of the Mass tonight, let's indeed really reflect on the people that the Lord has placed around us tonight. Maybe they're people you love, maybe they're your family and friends, maybe they're strangers. But just take that moment now just to really hold up in prayer the people that you happen to be sitting around you, and really intercede for them, that indeed God might be present to them, that the people that you will encounter over the next 24 hours, the ones that you'll sit next to at Christmas lunch tomorrow, pray and intercede for them as well. Pray that they might experience something of that power of God, the power that doesn't drive out fear, but allows fear to find its proper place, that allows our redemption to slowly begin to dawn.